Hi there, Michelle here. Maggie and I are super excited to be back and recording new episodes of the Birth Realm Australian Free Birth Stories. In this episode, we sit down with Danica, who free birthed her third baby after two cesarean sections. Danica shares with us her journey, which included two hematomas, being extremely fear-mongered by a GP who told her it would be dangerous to home birth her baby. We also talk about the term wild pregnancy and what it can mean for so many women. And we also talk about Danica's labour and birth, which spanned over 5 days. So grab your favourite drink, take a seat, or hit play as you hit the road, and enjoy this episode of The Birth Realm.
Good morning, Danica. It's so nice to have you on the show this morning. We've had a little break off recording, so it's super nice to be back in the studio. Do you want to start off today by telling us a little bit about yourself and your family and maybe how many babies you have?
Yeah, sure. Hi, Maggie. Good morning. And Michelle,
Hi.
Thank you so much for having me on here. It's such a big story, and I feel really, really honoured to tell it. Mm-hmm. I've got three little ones. The first two babies were born via C-section, and our third most recent pregnancy, we ended up going mostly a wild pregnancy, which I'll go into later, and we ended up free birthing him at home in our lounge room, which was just so beautiful. I've got, well, technically he's my fiance, but I always just refer to him as my hubby because it's easier. He's a chiropractor. We live down in Apollo Bay on the Great Ocean Road. We live a pretty calm life. It's really nice down there. Yeah, that's it. That's us. We've got two girls. The girls are 5, 3, and then Banksy's our little free birth babe. He's 14, nearly 15 months old now. And we are still keen maybe for more babies, particularly after that last experience. You know, it's crazy to think how it can really be and the change in me as a mother and how it's made me feel about having more babies. Watch this space. There could be more.
Can relate. Can really
it's
relate.
So you mentioned just then that you had a relatively predominantly a wild pregnancy. Did you want to chat about that and what led you to that?
Yeah, so look, to be honest, I wish I'd done it in the first place with my first baby. It's you're just sort of ticking boxes, aren't you, and following the direction of other people. I wanted to home birth my first daughter, but we lived an hour from the closest hospital that would take birthing women, and there was a lot of those comments where wait and see how you birth. Wait and see how you handle birth before you try to home birth. You might not be able to. And so I thought, oh, maybe they're right. I'll just do a hospital birth. And their stories are quite traumatic, I'd say, particularly my second daughter. So I went into this third one, and more than anything, I wanted to avoid the system. So it's probably in the beginning, it wasn't maybe the way I should have started my journey to free birth, being afraid of the opposite, you know, of the other option. But it was a lot of me wanting to avoid the previous trauma and realizing that, you know, if I go down that path, there's a high chance that I'll end with a similar outcome again. So I sort of went inwards and I decided I just wasn't going to follow those rules anymore. And basically I just, decided I wasn't going to go to the appointments. I decided I wasn't going to have any scans. However, what did end up happening was that I had quite a lot of heavy bleeding, and I just needed at that time some reassurance that everything was okay, particularly if I was going to be birthing at home. So we did go through some private midwives for a referral for a scan, and we just found out that I had two subchorionic hematomas. So it was nice to know what the cause of the bleeding was, and it gave me some peace of mind during that time when I was still bleeding. And so I just rested a lot, and then that was basically it. I think towards the very end of my pregnancy, I just wanted to check some bloods and just went to a doctor in town and said, all I want from you is some bloods. That interaction was probably the worst part of my whole pregnancy. He basically told me if I was trying to home birth, I would die. And it was a terrible move as a mother of two children already. Sorry, it makes me emotional when I think of that. But anyway, I left him. I left that appointment. It didn't change what I knew in my body that I was able to do this. But sorry, excuse me. It didn't change. Yeah, it didn't change what I knew deep down. What it did do is it made me really angry with the system that speaks to women like that. So I did avoid any other interaction after that. What I did do was I booked into a VBAC clinic in a town close by because our local hospital wouldn't even talk about the fact that I might show up in labour. They said they don't accept VBAC mamas in there after two C-sections. So I just wanted to tick some boxes basically, and I went to this hospital and I said, yeah, I'll just book in. They were very supportive, and in the end I didn't show up for any of my other appointments. It was an hour drive, so I just told them, like, I don't really need it, it's all good, going along well. I had pretty bad HG as well, so the travelling was no good for me in the car. So basically, we just went inwards from there. They sort of switched and said, look, we generally support VBAC. We are a VBAC clinic. We're very supportive. However, in your case, we've looked at your notes. We can see that your pelvis is unable to birth babies naturally, which, being a chiropractor's wife, I know that's not true. I never had a scan on my pelvis. They've never seen my pelvis. Plus, I mean, that shows nothing really anyway, unless there's a deformation or something there that cannot, wow. You know. So they, basically lied. They lied to me, tried to scare me with the fact that my previous girl had the cord around her neck when they got her out. And, you know, I know that's not an issue either in majority of cases. So, again, it was just one of those interactions on the phone where I was like, thank you for your time and no worries, like, I'm so glad I'm not going in there. You know, it was a real relief that I knew it didn't sway my confidence in my body. It swayed my confidence even more in the system and how my births had gone previous, probably. And then, we just waited and then went into labor with him at 39 weeks and 5 days, I think it was. And it was a very long labor. We were in labor at home for 5 days and five nights. It did not stop. I think the longest break I had was maybe 20 minutes on one night where I just fell in a heap and then I slept for about 20 minutes. But it was really magical, I will say. Like, it was so different. Like, the first couple of days it was pretty full on and I was vomiting during the labor, but we sort of we were able to eat then the next morning. And like, my fiance is a really good cook, so he cooked up a beautiful broth soup and they were nice. Feeding me honey and honey toast, and it was so amazing. I had like everything that made me comfortable in my home, and it was just wildly different. Like, I didn't eat at all with my other labors. And this was just really peaceful. It was so peaceful, even in the most intense parts of my labor. It was so peaceful. I can't explain it. And it was just amazing. And he was born then at 40 weeks and 3 days at 5:51 a.m. into our hands in the birth pool in our sort of kitchen living area. It was amazing. By then my fairy lights had lost battery, so there were no fairy lights. Probably something I would pay attention to next time. Hopefully I'm never in labor that long again. exactly. I was like looking back at the photos, like, where are my lights? Oh my gosh, they're flat. Of course they are. They've been on for days.
That's something we don't talk enough about. That might happen. Yeah. Spare
memories. Yeah. Oh, couldn't believe it.
Oh gosh, there's so much there. There's so much there to talk about, and that fear mongering that comes through. Oh my god, it makes my blood boil. Makes my blood boil because I just think about the women who don't know and aren't aware and don't have the strength that you had and the awareness that you had to know that what they were saying was absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just fires me up. So,
and this is like when we think about it, this is majority of women going into the system to have their baby for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's really important to touch on the fact that they think where that conversation was happening around like, oh, you don't, you know, you should wait to see how you can birth, you know, kind of like that first birth as being like a test run type thing, you know.
Yeah.
And women being like going into the system because they're being told like, oh, you should just see how you go and you should see how you labor and, you know, you should see how you can handle it. And I just feel like it's just not okay to be doing that to women. You know, women know what to do. They know how to give birth, and their first birth should not be a test run.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's crazy to me now. One of the people who spoke a lot about, you know, maybe just seeing how I would go and she would feel safer, I would feel safer, everyone would feel safer if I would just go to the hospital, you know. And that was my mum. And it's amazing the journey she's been on with me now, because she was present at our free birth. She read the books that I gave her to read. She did the research. She just totally backflipped on birth. She was like, oh my gosh. And I can't believe now when she speaks of her births, how much trauma she has in her body. It's just outrageous to me that, you know, it just flows on. Like, how many women are left like that, that then give that message to others, like not knowing that that shouldn't be the way, like you shouldn't feel like that after you give birth. You should feel powerful. You should feel stronger than you were before, not weaker. And like they saved you from yourself. You know, it's not a savior that they're giving you. They're essentially wounding you and sending you out to fellow women, telling them that birth is dangerous and it's traumatic, and listen to the experts, you know. It's and now she's so different about it, my mum. And she saw what can happen and the difference. She's been at many births, my mum, for my sisters, and she said like it was so different to see birth untouched. No one else had anything to do with it except me, really. Like, I birthed my baby with no help, and the feeling in the room and like the hours after, where we were just snuggled up on our own couch with, you know, this baby, and she was just crying her eyes out. Like, I can't believe this is how it's meant to be. It's so wrong. Like, it's so wrong every other way. And so it's really amazing. Like, our journey's changed a lot of lives, not just my own. So it's pretty special. Yeah, very healing. I think it healed a lot in my mum as well, but there's a lot more healing that needs to be done for her. She had five babies, and so some of them were very, very, very traumatic.
Did you want to speak about the preparation that you did going into this birth, and your partner as well, being a chiropractor? So
it is interesting. Like, he's very trusting, obviously, in the human body. Yeah. Like, that's the biggest thing about a chiropractor, probably their belief in how amazing a body is and how much it can do for itself if it's given the right like surroundings and right treatment, I suppose. So for me, my biggest thing probably was really listening to positive birth stories. For me, that definitely was in the form of VBAC stories, because as hard as I tried, I just could not understand non-VBAC stories, in that I loved listening to them, but they weren't valid for me. So I needed to hear like this person's had two C-sections. It wasn't just one, it had to be two. So I sort of sought those out, and I certainly tried to only talk about the positives really while researching what a true emergency was in birth, I suppose, because, you know, in previous labours I was told, oh, you're swelling, your cervix is swelling, sorry, game over, you know, things like that. And I suppose at the time I was like, oh, well, I mean, swelling, that must mean there's no way that the baby can get out and I'm too exhausted to wait. So it was a case of like really understanding the physiology of birth and knowing that there really, once you start looking into it, there really isn't a lot that goes wrong, not to the point where bang, you need to be in, cut open, baby out. There is so little that happens that can really lead to that point. And I think once I knew that, it took all of the stress away from the situation, because I knew, okay, like I sort of know what to look for in a labor to know. And then beyond that, I just feel what's right, you know. At least it'll take the stress out. If there's a little bit of blood, I won't straight away think I need to transfer to hospital for a little bit of blood or something like that. So I guess knowing and researching what does signify a true emergency and a real cause for transfer, then it really put my mind at ease and it put my body at ease. I couldn't believe how much more calm I was with the knowledge and going, I can't, it's just, there's not as much as you were led to believe that can go wrong. And I do regret not preparing myself better for birth prior to that, but I think my journey has brought me to this point. So now I can speak proudly that I overcame that and help other women. It's certainly, absolutely. Yeah. So beyond that, you know, I tried to release a lot of fear and a lot of trauma. I used some essential oils. I did a lot of meditation. I did energy work with healers, you know, trying to shift sort of stagnant energy from my body. But, you know, it was really unpacking what happened in my previous births and knowing that it wasn't a fault of my body. So I really had to go through that a lot in my mind to really truly understand what went wrong. It was probably pretty confronting for me at the time, because I had to admit I had a huge part in what happened in my births, in that I was naive, I would probably say, and I did go with things that deep down I knew would probably lead to worse outcomes, but I was in their hands, you know, so I gave away my power a lot to that system. And that's where, you know, where we ended up is obvious. We ended up in C-sections. And yeah, it was very confronting, very, very confronting, because it's easy to, it's easy to say, thank goodness they were there, they saved us. But beyond that, it's looking back and realizing that we wouldn't have needed saving had they just supported me in a different way, more emotionally. I was sort of losing it a bit in the hospital setting, and I didn't really have, I just didn't feel safe there. So beyond that, they just, you know, pump you, give you things to take the pain away, to do this, to do that. And now that I see that, you know, where that is likely going to end, I would never do that again. But it is, it's a journey I had to experience, I suppose, to get to the absolute best birth I could ever imagine, even though it did last a long time. It's like a holiday with not really any holiday. We had a week off, but not for, it was hard work, but I still would prefer a long labor for nearly a week over the other experiences I had. Yeah, so lots of energy work, lots of research, lots of positive stories, and I did really protect my own space. I was really strong in the way that I had certain people sort of saying, I don't know, I think what you're doing is, you know, it scares me. They were projecting their fear onto me. It scares me what you think you're going to do. I know you think you can do it, but it scares me. And I ended up just saying, you don't get to have any input anymore. I won't talk to you about this anymore. If you can't shut your mouth about your own fears, I won't let you in on this experience at all. I won't even tell you when the baby comes, you know. And it did, it sort of snapped a few people out of it, but mostly I lied to people, to be honest. I lied to people who asked me where I was birthing. Well, technically it wasn't a lie. I said I was booked in at the VBAC clinic in Geelong. So technically I told the truth. And that was part of the reason I did that, so that I could look straight up, look someone in the eye and tell them I was booked in somewhere. But yeah, not tell them my plan was to birth at home and only transfer in the case of a true emergency. So, yeah, protected my space.
So important. Important to protect your space. And if that means you do have to tell a little lie, then your energy bubble and your birth bubble is important. And if that means you need to put up big barriers and big walls for yourself to keep yourself safe in that and your plan safe, then you got to do what you got to do.
Absolutely.
Totally. It's hard to come to terms with the fact that you have to hide your birth plans from people when the way I feel now looking back, the way I did it was the way it should be done. An emergency a system should only be there for emergencies when it needed, you know. But
especially when there's people that you would like to talk to about it and are excited to talk to about it, and then if they're on the other end of it saying, oh, I'm scared for you, then you feel like you can't speak to them. That's really sad as well, because, you know,
can be pretty lonely.
I
think that's why this journey of free birth, and you know, it can feel super isolating and it can feel super lonely. Majority of the women we speak to feel that feeling of isolation and loneliness, and feeling like they have to protect themselves always and keep themselves within their bubble because they're seen as, you know, everything they're doing is seen as dangerous or really like radical. And yeah, like I hope through this podcast, what we're creating here is like normalizing that this is actually, you know, an epic way to give birth. And there's a lot of people doing it, a lot of women out there doing it, and it's not as lonely and, you know, isolating as we think.
And it's real, you know, it's real women.
Yeah.
You would not expect that are actually choosing this path. Like, I think it's got this vibe around it. Like, you know, if you talk to someone who truly believes in the hospital system, they see it as a dangerous woman who births like that. It's a reckless woman and it's a very alternative woman or something, but it's not how it is at all. It's just women searching for a really genuine, unhindered experience, really. Like it comes in many shapes and forms. You know, the women are all different. There's no type of person who does this. They are all just in it for the same end goal, which is a physiological untouched birth, which is like, how could you ever judge that? How could you ever judge that somebody doesn't want this sacred process to be touched by something that's not safe for them? You know, it's it baffles me. It really does. But I was there twice before I got to this point, you know, and I'm hoping that through sharing experiences like what you guys are doing now, it's absolutely amazing because it does normalize it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully more women will go into parenthood, you know, feeling whole and just you know, they're just love in a woman, you know. It's crazy. Hopefully this is what can happen, because it's so healing to birth like that.
I think it's shifting and changing for sure. I feel like it's more women are definitely stepping into their power, and more women are definitely moving away from the system and figuring out and leaning into how they actually want to give birth and how they want to be bringing these souls through into the world. Big changes. I just want to briefly touch on jumping right back. Do you mind speaking a little bit on your hematoma experience and what that around, how many weeks were you when you started bleeding, and what you did to move through that? And if you don't mind, it would be really nice to hear a bit about that. Well, not nice, but yeah, would love to hear your experience.
Yep, we can normalize something else that can sometimes seem a little bit scary. I mean, blood at any point, yeah, scary for women, isn't it? Yeah. We're taught to hate blood from a young age, really, aren't we? It's in so many ways, and you'd think that we would find it quite normal having blood coming from our vaginas, but we also don't really take on our moon, our monthly moon, the way that we probably should as well. That's a story for another day. But I started bleeding with this pregnancy at about 6 weeks, and I was very sick at the time. I was vomiting all day and all night. So my pregnancy symptoms were very strong. So in a way, I felt a lot of relief because of that, because I deep down thought, well, I wouldn't be this sick if I was losing the baby. But it was a lot of blood. It was like gushing blood, like cups of blood at a time. And it went on sort of, I would sort of spot and then gush again. And it went on. I had a calm like feeling about that, in that if it wasn't the right time for this soul, that was okay too, and I was going to let it pass naturally. But it just kept going on and on. And I was 13 weeks and I had no intention of having the sort of 12, 13 week scan, but I just needed to know that it was all okay by that point. It had sort of got to this level of anxiety that I think, you know, the lesser evil was to have a scan and put my mind at ease. So I went in there at about 13 weeks and they saw two subchorionic hematomas that were on the opposite side of my uterus to the placenta. So they weren't worried. I think it can be a little bit more of an issue if it's underneath the placenta, but I'm not that well versed on hematomas in pregnancy. I did look more for the issues around having them on the opposite side, as I did. And it doesn't really have high risks, but it's worth resting so you're not losing blood regularly. Some of the risks I saw were like preterm labor and things like that. But I ended up going on sort of bed rest more or less for the next 5 weeks or so, and the bleeding sort of slowed down and I didn't have any bleeding after that. So it was around 6 weeks to 17 maybe that I bled, and then it went away. It was such a strange thing. I had never had any bleeding in previous pregnancies really, and this was a lot of bleeding, so it was really hard to know and lean in with that fear overriding any intuition. Looking at that knowledge now and how I was feeling, I think without that fear of blood coming to the forefront, I would have known deep down that my baby was okay, because when I found out there was hematomas and the baby was okay, I thought, well, of course it is. I knew that. But I still went to them to give me this reassurance that I have the ability to give myself. And, you know, perhaps looking back, I should have just known, like, okay, well, it's time to rest. You know, your body's trying to make you rest. Just put your feet up and honor that, you know. So I believe there's a message in everything that happens. But it was really hard to not let the fear override that, I suppose, with, yeah, as you say, like we're taught to sort of fear blood, and it's hard to understand that when you don't have a deeper understanding of it, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's like an incredible amount of trust for you to be able to really sit in that. And I think, you know, I'd find that super challenging as someone that has experienced miscarriage as well. So, yeah, power to you. Yeah. But I feel like your intuition was telling you, you know, underneath all of that, that your baby was okay. And that's like, this is like the preparation of birth, you know, this is like that underlying deep work that we talk about. It's like tuning into these little lessons that are popping up along the journey of listening to our body. And if that means our body's bleeding to tell us to rest, it's surrendering to that. Mm. And yeah. Amazing, amazing that you were able to do that. And also so incredible that you were also open and okay to going and getting some reassurance, because I think that it's very easy to get stuck in the, oh, I have to have a, you know, to have a wild pregnancy, it means that I don't go in and I don't get any scans. And, you know, I think it's like those things are there for us to go to if we need them and if we feel called to having them. So
it's a really good point what you've just said about that feeling of wanting it to be wild. I did experience that a lot through my pregnancy, that I was desperate for this experience. And it was hard for me to admit that I would go and have a scan. It was a really hard thing to do because I didn't want to do it that way. You know, I did want to have full trust, but yeah, things do happen. It tests you. It does test you. And as much as I'd love to be a person who 100% intuitively knows, you know, I still am dealing with like generational trauma, cellular trauma in my body that does still have this inkling of like, maybe this is when the system comes in, you know, like it's still there. Like sometimes you have to consciously be like, okay, is this like a fear and, you know, or is it intuition? I don't know. It's really hard to decipher when you've been really, it's been drilled into us from such a young age that we need them. We need them for everything. Mm. They're going to save us from ourselves. They are, you know, we can't save ourselves. They are there for that, you know. And it's, I think, really hard in this day and age to decipher. It takes real strength to decipher between that fear and intuition and when something's really wrong or if it's just this fear message that we have in our brain.
And I think, you know, one person's wild is going to be different to the next. Absolutely. I think that the terms of like wild pregnancy and free birth, like all the buzzwords come up and like so all this like use around language and what one thing means and what one thing means. And it's just like whatever a woman is experiencing on her journey, if she wants to say she had a wild pregnancy or she had a free birth, and you know, even if she did have scans but she still wants to use that language, that's okay.
Absolutely.
You know, she there's just not one way. It shouldn't look like, oh, you didn't do this because you went and had a, you know, I think that we need to hold space for ourselves in that like we're just doing the best that we can and we're feeling into what feels good in our body. And that means we need to go somewhere or see someone, then that's okay.
Especially I think when like the decision is made by the woman, like she's not being told you need to go and get this scan. You sat within yourself and thought, yeah, I'm going to go and just get this checked out. You didn't have anyone telling you to do that. So,
That was pretty much what I was just about to say. It's like the wild part of is it that the mum is making the rules, isn't it? Like, and it's however those rules really look is, a mum's choice. And that's the wild part about it. Absolutely. It's not following orders, basically. Yeah.
Yes. Loving this conversation. Do you want to take us into your birth journey and how your labor started, what came up first, how you knew you were going into labor and how it progressed and how you moved through that marathon? Like, so incredible. I was saying to Michelle before we started, like, you know, there's so much like ideology around like a short birth and everyone always wants to ask you like, oh, so how long was your labor? Like, you know, it's an issue like whether it was longer or shorter or a better birth if it's shorter. So I think it's super important to talk on the fact that some labors are long and that's okay, but how can we actually support women to labor over 5 days without exhausting themselves and feeling like they need to go to hospital? Like, how can we allow women to labor at home and, you know, still free birth their babies and be in their own space but have the support and the trust to do that? So excited to hear your journey.
It's a big one. It was so basically I think that was a Wednesday I think it was a Wednesday that I went into labor. I was having regular sort of tightenings, I'll call them, during the day. My elder daughter, my eldest daughter was at kinder. And so I was sort of resting a lot with my little one. We put a movie on and it was really mild. I'll call it mild, like strong sort of period pains probably strong period pains. And they were coming in waves, but I just sort of figured it might have been like Braxton Hicks, or I'd been having prodermal labor for weeks where pretty much every night we'd make the call to my mum, you might have to come tonight. I'm having contractions every 5 minutes, lasting a minute. It's been 6 hours. And then by the morning they would stop. So my mum would come for sleepovers so she could help with our older daughter, our two older girls, sorry. And then basically on this Wednesday, they started to get, by about 6 p.m., I reckon, I started to get, a little bit more vocal with it, and I needed to really breathe through them. They were coming, I reckon, every 5 to 8 minutes and lasting a minute. And they just got more intense over the next few hours, to the point I couldn't really converse. I was fully in labor land. And we had a doula that was traveling from an hour away. She was just incredible in her like unwavering trust in birth. She's just an absolute, I can't explain the energy that she brought to our space. She was so, so clear, really. She had a clear energy that just gave a little bit of strength, you know. It wasn't, she didn't bring any of her own energy into the space. All she brought was love and belief, I'd say. And it was amazing. So she came down that night, and I would say that the labor was pretty intense that night. It lasted all night. We were in and out of the pool, in and out of the shower, you know, moving around a fair bit. And I was starting to get a bit exhausted. I was vomiting a fair bit between contractions. Yeah, by morning, I wouldn't say it slowed down at all, but the daylight brought about a bit more energy. So I was able to sort of rest in between and have some food, and I didn't feel so exhausted once the sun came up. So I continued laboring through that day and again through that night, and it was the same story. And then I'd say on day, that would be day three, the next day, so after two nights of labor and a whole day, I would say that the in-between shifted. So the intensity of the contractions, I'm not sure, I would almost explain them as being the same as they had been up until this point, but my mindset had changed and it was very relaxed. And in between contractions, I was able to sort of talk to people and converse, and at times even giggle and laugh, you know, which I hadn't been doing prior to that. And so they were still going on at about 5 to 8 minutes apart. The next night, you know, so our doula sort of came and went over this time. She's got children of her own. And looking back, she probably could have done with way more break time. She was there a lot, the poor thing. But she sort of just hung around in the background. She was really hands off. She didn't encroach on our space. We just sort of moved around, and when I needed her, she'd just look, you know, even just looking at me like, you got this, you're okay, it was enough. So we sort of had people coming and dropping food for us. Rani's family were in town as well, and my sisters live also around the area, so they sort of came and went. Looking back now, I believe every time that happened it stirred my energy, so I don't think I would allow that kind of movement in the labor space again, but I probably wasn't really with it enough to say no. I believe it could have been part of the reason it just kept going, because I wasn't fully relaxing into the situation. It's hard to remember which day it was.
Can I just ask, when you said people were coming over, were they just dropping food or coming into the space and just sort of seeing how you were and stuff?
there was coming into the space. Yeah. So I did notice, and looking back, it's probably more clear that I wasn't handling contractions as well once they came. It was like, you know, perhaps like I became more aware of the exhaustion and the pressure on me to be laboring and to bring this baby about, you know. So I would cry during contractions, and I would say, I just can't do this anymore, you know. And there was a lot of that when other people were there, not so much when it was just us. So it's such a sensitive space. And looking back, yeah, I don't know how it would have gone if that didn't happen, but I do believe it interrupted the flow that I was in. And the interactions were by no means like uncomfortable, or like they were people that I adore and love and felt safe with them there, but obviously it just wasn't quite right. It just honestly just kept going. I was using a TENS machine, moving about a lot. I was doing things like taking CBD, taking magnesium if it was getting a little bit too intense and I just needed to like try to calm it. I'm not sure by this point how much that helped, because I was way past the point of magnesium being able to give me a rest, but I still tried it anyway. I was doing, you know, taking homeopathics to try to move things along. And on the last day that we were in labor, we decided I think it was more of a call of our doula that everybody just clear out and we have the whole time just to ourselves. We laid on a mattress in the lounge room and we had movies on, and, you know, it was just, looking back, it was such a special time. And it was the only time that Rani and I got alone during the whole process, really. And it was really special. So it was just a lot of resting. By this point, you know, I sort of stopped trying to move things along with movement, because it was clear I needed to look after my energy, physical energy as well, because it was taking a lot out of me being in labor that long. Yeah, it was a really blissful day. And I'd say like it really bumped up that oxytocin. It was a real love bubble. So by about 6 p.m. that night, it was very, very clear that it had shifted to active labor, because I would describe myself as a rabid dog, like bouncing off the walls, basically. I was in the shower and I couldn't stop moving between contractions, and I was really starting to roar, and, you know, the sound had changed, and my water hadn't broken still, and I hadn't had any like bloody show or anything like that. So by about midnight, I think that was when I had my bloody show. And I will say that the labor from about 6 p.m., it was almost unbearable back labor. I found it very hard to stay calm through that whole period, because it was like very, very terrible back labor. And I probably
Was it just you and your partner here at this time, like when you were experiencing that really bad back labor? Was everyone still out of the space? Or it was just you and your partner? Or
no, so my mum had come back. She was on pool duty. Yeah. So to be honest, because it had been on and off, in and out of that for so long, it was a godsend that she was there in the background doing that. Mostly we didn't really know that she was there. She was just sort of, she would wash the towels and then dry them, and then always have warm towels for me ready when I got out of the shower or the bath.
Beautiful.
We went through a lot of towels. And so, yeah, it was good having her there. She sort of just was in the background, mostly didn't know she was there. And the doula had come back by about 6:30 or 7, I reckon, that night. She had come back and was there as well. But again, she was sort of off in the background a bit, yeah. I had my bloody show around midnight, I think. And it was really, it shifted things for me, I think, because I wanted my water to break. That was the one thing I felt like I needed to happen to know that the baby was actually going to come, I suppose. Like it was really like it was on my mind, like why, you know, certain things need to happen before this baby can come out. And obviously a baby can be born and call, but I have, my waters had broken in both my previous labors, and I felt like I needed that reassurance that it was time. So it was sort of hard beyond that, thinking like there are things that will happen before the baby comes and they're not happening yet. So how long is this going to go? And I started to, I'll say it, lose my shit a little bit at this point. And I was begging for something, like help, you know, something, help me. I can't do this any longer. I'm so exhausted. I've been doing this for days. I can't do this anymore. It's too much. I remember my doula, she sort of stepped in at this point. I was looking to her for something, and she said, look, either your baby's going to come after this intensity or your body will give you a rest. Either way, you'll get a rest. Like, it's not going to go like this forever. This intensity can't last forever. Either this is the moment before your moments before your baby, or it's the moments before your body will identify that it needs a rest and it will slow down. You'll be okay, you know. And that helped a lot. I think my water broke at about 3 a.m. and absolutely that changed my mindset, and I was a lot more calm after that. I felt like I could handle the contractions. It did release a little bit of the pressure probably that was on my back, and maybe at this point baby had started to descend, because up until this I couldn't even feel the baby's head. Like, I tried to feel and I couldn't feel anything at all. Like, he was still so high. So I will say that was a little bit disheartening, probably thinking that he should have been lower. But again, it's just one way that labor happens, isn't it? Like, it's such right. a big lesson. Like, there's no, you know, and this is something I say a lot, like, dilation doesn't tell you anything about when a baby is going to come. And this is part of the reason why I didn't want cervical checks in my second pregnancy. And looking back, you know, when we decided to have one on the, we had a private midwife, she recommended we have one, and everything went downhill from there. Mm. Her language was, you are only 6 centimeters. And it was like, looking at that now, I think, oh, that language, like, it should have been like, yay, your body's dilating. It's working. You're 6 centimeters. Beautiful. Baby could come in 10 minutes, like, or baby could come in hours. Who knows, you know? But yay. So this time was really amazing, not having any of those external messages, I suppose. So yeah, I still couldn't feel baby, but it was pretty wild. Like, you know, I'm not sure what time it would have been, but the back labor just magically went away, and I could actually feel the contractions at this point were so nice, because they felt like they were doing something. And probably up until this point, I hadn't really, it was just pain really in my head. It was just lots of pain. I knew that it was doing its job and it was bringing baby earth side, but I couldn't feel it. It didn't feel like they were really pushing the baby down. As soon as the back labor went, I could feel it just changed and the pressure started to lower. And it was bloody amazing. Like, his little head started to come out, and I can't explain the feeling. Like, it just, like, knowing it was happening. Like, up until that point, it wasn't, I was still just trying to do it, you know, I was trying to get there. But when I could feel his hair, and I was like, it's actually happening. I had a big smile on my face, and it was like, oh my God, he's coming, you know. We didn't know it was a boy, but the baby's coming. And so, you know, his little head popped out, and my fiance Rani was in the pool, and he had his hands on his head. And Rani's actually a pediatric chiro. So he has a huge interest in, obviously, like, birth, for the experience that it brings baby and the physical pressure of birth on a baby's body. He's so, so passionate about it. And so he actually felt that pressure of birth on this baby with no interruption. He was like, it was so gentle. Like, that little head came out, and sure enough, turned while he was still inside me, turned, and the next contraction, he just came out, and Rani directed him underneath, and I pulled him up to my chest, and I just cried. Like, it was just bloody magical. Like, it makes me want to giggle. I just, that moment was so special, and I had him on my body. He did have the cord around his neck. I think it might have been around a couple of times, and to be honest, I was a little bit like, I was slow moving in this moment, and the doula did step in and just she sort of helped me unwind it, because I couldn't really find myself in that moment. So she did help me unwind the cord a little bit, just help me put it over his head. Yeah, he was very quiet. It was interesting. He took a little while to come into his body, I'll say, but I didn't feel any stress. It was like he was just taking his time, you know. It wasn't there was nothing wrong. He didn't come out squawking. He came out quiet. And he never really cried. He didn't really cry much for the first 5 months of his life, to be honest. Like, he was such a calm boy. And I think, you know, there's this pressure to have this baby screaming on the way out. It's like the normal way. But to see him be born in such a calm manner, and I know some babies do still squawk on birth, but they're so calm. Like, he was so calm. It was like he just knew, yeah, that was nice. Like, that wasn't traumatic at all, you know. And he was so peaceful. So we just sort of sat in the pool for a little while, sort of giggling and crying. And then we moved, probably after about maybe half an hour or so, we moved over to the couch, and the placenta basically birthed. So he latched straight away. And then maybe another 20 minutes later, the doula just got me to stand up and the placenta fell out. It was just like, oh, that was pretty simple, wasn't it? You know, like, it just, she caught it in a bowl and sat it next to us, and the baby stayed connected there for ages. Yeah, it was just so peaceful. I can't describe it any other way. It was a peaceful experience, and the intensity was really strong and the exhaustion was real, but it was all so worth it in that moment.
Were your other children there?
My idea was to have them there, and they did stay for the first couple of days, but Bowie wasn't even two yet, and Novi, she was four at the time. She's really sensitive to energy of other people, so I think she found it really hard to deal with the fact that I was making noises. I tried to prepare them for this by watching lots of birth stories, particularly ones with women screaming. And every morning she would come into my bed and be like, "Mummy, can we watch birth movies?" And I was like, "Yeah, let's watch birth movies." And she was like, "Wow." And I remember watching this one lady birth, and she goes, "Wow, Mummy, that lady is calm." And I was like, "She is calm. Let's watch another one." Because I knew I was quite a birther. I was like, "She's amazing, isn't she?" But, you know, and she was like, "Wow, she is calm. Wow." So, yeah, then I did try to sort of expose her to birth with blood and screaming and all sorts of things so she would know it's okay. But I think, like, for her, it was a worry. She was really... they were very interested, but it did distract me a little bit. So after a couple of days, they weren't also sleeping, because I was labouring quite loudly through the night. They weren't actually sleeping at all. So they ended up going to my sister's house, who she knew them really well. So they were very safe and supported there, and had some time with their Nana and Poppy, Rani's parents as well. And they sort of came and went over there a few days. So they'd pop in and stay for half an hour, and they would just sort of give me a cuddle, and, you know, I'd have a chat to them about what they'd been doing and stuff, and then they'd go again. So I'm a bit sad that they weren't there for the birth, but I think it just didn't work that way for us as a family, because it just went for too long. But I think if we have another baby, I would like to try to have them there.
It's just about surrendering into whatever takes place, isn't it? You know, my little one just missed our birth at the end too. And I, like, you know, there's always those things that we want to happen, but it's always going to happen the way that it's meant to. And
your mum was there?
Yes, she was. Yep. She was crying. She was quietly crying. I've never seen my mum be so quiet, actually. She's a bit of a whirlwind, my mum. She's got a lot of energy, but it's amazing how her energy changed during the labor. And she just was so quiet, like a mouse the whole time. Even, I know, Michelle, you put up a post, and it was something along the lines of, you know, when the baby comes, take five steps back or something, and don't do anything, don't make any noise. And I did feel like that was pretty much how it went for us. Like there wasn't a lot of interruption. And when I saw that post that you shared with your own words, I thought that was exactly what it, yeah, it's so true. And it's so necessary to not put anything into that energy that's, yeah, you just have to step away. Yeah.
Yeah. And just like consciously be quiet, not even like nothing. So sometimes that can be hard too, but it's like just, you know, knowing yourself and being aware. So oh, beautiful.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was amazing. It's crazy how different I feel as a mother since I had him. Looking back, I'm an attachment parent and I'm always, everything I do is for my kids. Like I'm very much involved in kids. I breastfeed. I'm happy to, like, we co-sleep and things like that. But it's a feeling inside me that it's really hard to describe. Like with the girls, I felt like I was sort of on autopilot, like coasting through parenting, feeling like there just was something not quite right, you know, like a bit of a shell. And I have not felt that. I'm so much more in touch with who I am. And it doesn't mean I'm like magically a different person in most ways, but the feeling I have about myself has changed and I don't feel empty. Like I do feel different. It's really hard to explain. It's probably not something that has words you can give it. I don't think words could ever give this feeling like what it deserves, really. It's different. It's so different. And I wish everyone could experience it.
Yeah. I absolutely believe that that's how we're meant to feel.
Yeah.
And that they absolutely don't want us to know that.
And I know. It's pretty so dangerous.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Try me. I just had the baby. Yeah. Come at me, mate. You won't win.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can't have too many fierce mamas out there.
No.
They're out there. Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing with us. I feel like we've spoken to quite a few people about how baby comes through and takes a little while to land in their body and is not crying. And I think that is just a part of birthing in a supported, safe, calm environment where they know that mum is in touch and feel safe. And that's just their way of, you know, landing. And
it's not rushed,
it's
is
so
it?
Beautiful to witness. So.
Yeah.
And when you actually think of the physical side of their soul coming through and actually landing here in this realm, it makes so much sense for them to take that time and be slow and allow themselves to wake to, you know, their environment.
You know, you have this vision of how babies are born and then bang, like they're, it does, it takes time for that soul to really settle in there, I think.
Oh, for sure. Sure. And then when there's no fear or anxiety around that moment, and it's just able to just happen as it's meant to, slowly and gently with love infused in there, it just happens perfectly. So no fear.
No, it was pretty special. Amazing.
So special.
Makes you just want to have so many babies.
Yes, it most certainly does. I can completely relate to that. Yeah. Do you want to share a little with us about your postpartum journey and moving into that after phase of birth and how was that experience for you? How has it been?
it's good. It was really good. It's a part of my journeys that I really would like to work more on. And I do see there needs to be a lot of change around, you know, postpartum and how we're like, I think the pressure within ourselves more than anything, like as much as I wanted to be still and at home for as long as possible with no people around and, you know, all of these things, I was out 4 days after we had Banksy. We took him to the beach. Like, and so it felt right in that moment. We just went for a little drive. It was more about getting the little girls out. We were sort of coming to the end of our summer period. That was in March. and it was a beautiful warm day, nice and still. And the girls, you know, we just saw this opportunity to take the girls to the ocean. And Rani's a surfer, so getting the baby near the ocean wasn't a bad thing for him. He was like, let's give this baby an initiation to the ocean energy. But, yeah, looking back, I do feel like I rush the postpartum a little bit. I don't honour it as much as I probably should. Besides that little beach trip, there was a lot of just quiet resting at home. I didn't do much. We had a meal train, so people were dropping food, and there's nothing like being fed postpartum or any time really, is there? Like when things are happening, you know, it's so nourishing in so many ways to take that pressure off a family and feed them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we had a lot of time just resting and relaxing, but obviously with two older kids, it was still busy. Something I need to look at more energetically, like postpartum, what I want that to look like. If we have another baby, there'd probably be more ceremony and more reflection, I suppose. Like, took me a little bit to write our birth story, and when I did, I found that that was a really nice closing for the journey. But prior to that, I hadn't really given it a lot of thought, even though, you know, the thought kept coming back, like, I can't believe I birthed a baby. That's go me, you know. Like, I did think it all the time, but it wasn't like a spiritual journey that I was actually reflecting on. It was just a physical journey that I was reflecting on. So we had a really calm postpartum, and it was really restful and full of love. Perhaps, honouring it in different ways would have been something that I wish I'd done. But I guess, like, every journey is just as it's meant to be, and I just sort of go with the flow a fair bit in general in life. So, you know, maybe that's what the ideal postpartum is for me, just going with the flow of whatever comes up then. Yeah, so it was really nice. It was beautiful, actually. Yeah, the recovery, I tell you, was so much better after a natural birth compared to a C-section. And I would say I had relatively good C-sections in the grand scheme of things, but I'd say the emotional aspect was different as well. Like, I was dealing with probably just a lot of trauma. I had PTSD after the birth of our second daughter, so I was having panic attacks, and, you know, it was really disruptive for that postpartum period. So, yeah, it was really a totally different feeling. I just felt calm in myself the whole time. Yeah, worlds apart, absolutely.
So powerful for you to share your story. But you've written out your birth story. Have you shared it much? Like speaking it?
No, not really. I find sometimes people don't really want to know the ins and outs of a pregnancy that sort of goes against what they believe in. So I find, you know, I've spoken about my birth journeys a little bit on social media. If I'm trying to explain why I have the views that I have, I share quite strong views when it comes to birth. It's pretty outrageous. I believe in a woman. Like, can't believe it. How dangerous. But
how
I do
dare you?
I know, shit. Like, and I do have women sometimes come at me and say, like, well, sorry, but you don't know what, like, you don't understand, you know, you can't, like, if XYZ hadn't happened, my baby would have died. And it's so I have had I've felt the need to speak to my own experiences, and I have done that, like, on stories and stuff like that. And I've, you know, broken down in stories, like, I'm not insensitive, this is what I've been through, I'll explain it so you understand why I care. I care about you, I don't want you to end up like me, you know, like, it wounded me big time, like, I don't want it to do that to you. So I have definitely spoken to it, and I've shared my birth story on my, like, on my wall of my Instagram, whatever you call it. And yeah, it's certainly, like, I've had quite a few women say they were inspired and go on to have home births after things like VBACs, and there's one lady in particular, you know, we spoke a lot, and she didn't realize she had a choice, she was just going to go back for another C-section, and And she ended up birthing a baby at home with just her husband. The baby was big, a big, beautiful baby girl. And it was her first natural birth. And she had three boys that were born from C-section. So, you know, it was a very, very straightforward birth. And it's changed her as well. So I'm hearing these stories of women that were really inspired by that. And that's what makes it worth it, really, you know. And since I've done my doula training, and I'm hoping to step into that space for other women, and I've got my first birth coming up soon, so thank you, you're giving the platform to do this, and it's amazing. It's certainly changed my journey, being able to hear the voices of the women who had done this before and the stories, you know. And I think, you know, it is really, for me, the most important thing about sharing my journey is normalizing long labor. As you said earlier, it can be normal, you know. It's a real mental game, labor. And I think if you expect, most first time mothers give birth in XYZ, you know, time frame, and then they go over that, they automatically think there's something wrong with their bodies, and it's just downhill from there. I was one of those people. When I went into labor with my first daughter, it was sort of like the movies, you know, my water broke in the middle of the street and I thought I was wetting myself, but I wasn't. When we went in there, they were like, oh, this is progressing like textbook. You'll have your baby by sundown. And the next morning at 8 a.m. I was being wheeled in for a C-section, and that, you know, they told me I'd swollen and there was no chance, and if they weren't there, we would have both died, that sort of story, you know. So it's like the longer it went, the more my mind was like, there's something wrong, just automatically, just because of time, you know. Whereas this time, like, I was so aware of my baby and myself. And I believed that I just needed time, you know, and it was definitely an important part of having a doula there. She was very, very trusting in the process being long. And she was like, this is just how it needs to be, like that. You don't need to think about it anymore. If this is the way your body needs to birth, this is the way it needs to happen. It doesn't need to be quick. It just has to happen in the way that's natural for you. And it was life-changing, hey? And I do hope that at least if, you know, someone hears this and they're used to long labors and it goes downhill, but just purely on a time perspective, they might feel more inspired to wait it out a bit, you know, and not feel stressed that they've been in labor for days. Or it's just an energy game, I think, though, at that point. You have to have a tribe around you to feed you. Like, the biggest thing is not being fed when you're in labor, isn't it? Like, you're running out of energy, and they tell you in hospital, like, sorry, no, just in case we do these things.
And I think it's important to touch on the fact that, you know, if women are birthing in hospital, majority of the time they don't have the time to wait and journey with these women, you know. So that's the incredible thing about being at home and in your own space, is being able to lean into it and trust it. And if you've got that support team around you that can hold you in that space, you know, you're gonna be able to move through it a lot easier.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for jumping on today with us and telling us your story and getting it out to the world. It's such medicine.
It is, yeah. Well, you know, if there's just the one right person to hear this and it changes their story, then that's enough, you know.